fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
McCown will be back. Well, I think Sarah's doing this next week.
That'll be fun.
He'll like
this song. Ugly Kid Joe.
Yeah. Crap. Sixera will be back. Will be in next week, and McCown will be back the week after. This is not even really music.
I want to know if when Sid comes back, will he keep his beard? He has a beard right now that makes him look like he works some sort of midway game, and he's about 15 years old. He cannot grow a beard.
He does look like he's got a little carny thing happening
The carny look. It is awesomely awful. I love it. And Sid, if you're listening, keep that beard, buddy. Keep the gravy stains in it, whatever else, don't air sauce. Keep that beard. Speaking of men with beards, Stephen Brunt is bare.
Stephen Brunt is bare. We still don't have a Brunt Bear update. As far as I know, I'm the last person.
Let me check my phone. Just one second.
I may be the last person to converse with Brunt about his bear. And as of this morning, they had not caught a bear, which means the bear, probably didn't pay a visit.
Remains loose. I just checked my phone. Still no correspondence from Stephen Brunt. It's now 7:31 in Newfoundland.
Right. So Brunt's probably at the pub or at the Legion or. Probably still, maybe something's biting and he's still fishing anyhow.
Could be.
But rest assured that when we find out about Brunt's bear, we will let you know. My guess is if nothing has happened today, we'll probably have to wait again for the nightfall.
Well, I know it's a Tim and Sid thing, but we may have to get some sort of bear update music. They had Panda Watch on Anchorman. We have Brunt's bear here.
The second day in a row you've mentioned Anchorman.
Well, this is only the second day in a row we've done Bear Watch
but
for Stephen Brunt.
I haven't seen Anchorman. There's
How
a whole
can
bunch
you
of
work
people
in this industry and not have seen Anchorman.
Because Will Ferrell's a moron.
You are a television pretty boy now, Blair. Accept it.
I'm not.
You've come to the land of hair and teeth, teleprompters, and ties, and
fat
suits.
54-year-old white guy. So here's the other news today, other than Brunt's bear. This, you know, obviously pales in comparison, but a person, this is from John Warrow of the Associated Press, a person close to the situation says a Buffalo Bills prospective ownership group that includes rocker John Bon Jovi, the Rogers family, and Larry Tannenbaum has conducted a feasibility study into buying the NFL franchise and building a stadium in Toronto. The person says the study identified at least three potential stadium sites, two in Toronto, including one on the waterfront, and another in Mississauga. Now, we're going to be joined by Richard Petty, of course, former president and CEO of MLS&E. Just a little background here, because I think we spoke to John Warrow a couple of days ago, and Richard, I'd like to bring you in this. And he made it very clear that essentially the NFL has said to all parties, you know, you buy this, there are some rules you're going to have to abide by as far as keeping the team in Buffalo. And we know there's an exit clause. I think it's $24 million after 2018 or whatever it is. But essentially, John Warrow's take on it is the NFL has told ownership groups, you know, if you buy this and immediately trumpet that you're going to move the team, you may not get this passed. So my first reaction, Richard, when I saw this is this leak might be coming from somebody who doesn't want this group to buy the Bills. Am I just being suspicious?
in an era of conspiracy theory, I hadn't thought of that myself. I think it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of political pressure on anyone who's going to try to move the Bills. I mean, you've got a governor who's going to stand up for it. I think you've got two state senators. You've got the fan base. The NFL really doesn't, even though they've moved some franchises over their many, many years of history, they don't like that. Their preference would probably be very strongly to keep it in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Now, can they get the price for it? I mean, there was, in that same article, I mean, I think someone said something, you know, it's worth X in Buffalo. It's worth X plus Y. And in Toronto, it's X plus plus. Mm-hmm. If you move it to LA. So, you know, the price might be so high, and then once the price gets really high, the family is going to say, hey, listen, why should we not be able to get the highest price? So there's going to be a lot of dynamics, a lot of political pressure. It's tough to handicap right now.
Yeah. Is this a story about business or politics or everything?
Well, because the NFL is so important in the NFL in the United States, it has a political side to it for sure. It is business. You know, you're going to spend a couple $1 billion to buy a franchise and build a stadium. You know, you see what's happened with the Clippers. I mean, incredible. I mean, there was a team that there's $2 billion. I read today in an article, it's 12 times revenue. You don't typically buy businesses at 12 times revenue. You buy it as a multiple of earnings. But, you know, so it is. It's big business, and it's always politics if it's the NFL. Or if it's the NHL and NBA. The commissioners are always mindful of that.
Richard Petty joins us on Primetime Sports. Richard, when you were with MLSE, how far along was the thinking and the planning when it came to an NFL franchise? Because I think a lot of us have felt that this has been, you know, that someplace there's this sinister plan locked in a drawer someplace that's been there for 30 or 40 years, you know, that would bring an NFL franchise here. And quite frankly, if it wasn't Rodgers or the people running the Blue Jays, I mean, you know, other people would think it would be MLSE. Like, is this a dossier that has been developed over years?
No, not that. But we took a really hard look at it about 5 years ago. We retained a very knowledgeable firm that really knew all the numbers, all the financials of the NFL. And we really looked at it hard. And we did it a couple different scenarios. It was just coming out, I think it was about 2009, and we're just coming out of the recession. So we thought maybe that'd be a great time to get a franchise at an affordable price. And it was really tough to get it to work financially. You know, when I invested in, you know, soccer, invested in Maple Leaf Square, I was always really mindful of return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not get it to work. I mean, there wasn't a franchise to buy, but we just couldn't get it to work and satisfy teachers. Now I think what you're seeing, especially going back to the Clippers, someone wants that team. If Larry and Bon Jovi and Edward Rodgers want that team and don't care about a return on investment, then I think the file is active and can be very active easily. For us, we shut the file down because we were looking at return on investment, could not get it. You know, I was there another 2 years after we looked at it. Nothing else happened in that time frame. You know, with Tim, and Tim's been chasing an NFL team out in L.A. for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to be a pretty active file right now. But it hasn't been in a drawer. It's not this master plan that's been in a drawer for years.
So, Richard, you guys just kind of looked at numbers. You didn't take it anywhere beyond that? Did you poke around with any phone calls or
no,
anything like
I mean,
that?
It was really tough to get a low return on investment. And in those days, I felt maybe we could pull it off for $1.5 billion. Now I think it really is $2 billion.
Wow.
But again, if you're Ballmer who's buying the Clippers and don't give a damn about how much you're going to pay for it, go buy yourself a team. Don't worry. I mean, you know, that was my mistake. I'm worried about return on investment. I'm not going to end up with an NFL team. If you don't care about a return on investment or a decent one, then go buy a team.
How would an NFL team make money here?
Oh, it makes money.
Yeah.
It does do that. It's just that you got $2 billion invested.
Right. Yeah.
No, I think every one of the NFL teams makes money. You can't say that.
TV alone.
And, you know, I don't know. It's maybe not a lot of money, $30, $50 million a year. But, you know, they make money. It's, you know, that the broadcast deals cover your player costs right mm-hmm. off the bat. So it is, and, you know, it's a great business. It's very well run. I think it's the best run of all the leagues. And, you know, I participated in a couple of them, and I right. still would say that about the NFL.
Hey Richard, obviously when you talk about bringing an NFL team to Toronto, we're joined, by the way, by Richard Petty on Primetime Sports. When you talk about bringing an NFL team to Toronto, the first... not necessarily for me, but for a lot of people, the first thing they would think of is, okay, whither the Argos. And my sense, and I could be wrong, but my sense is that over the course of the past 5, 6, 7 years, that people have kind of come around to the idea that if the Argos can't stand on their own, you know, that it would be awful to see them go, but that the idea that it's the Argos standing in the way of an NFL team coming here is really overblown. I mean, I've had a couple of people tell me that. They've said, you know, there are certain champions of the CFL in the media that keep bringing it up. But they said, by and large, if the NHL or if the NFL said tomorrow, hey, we're willing to put a team in Toronto, there'd be a team in Toronto. And, you know, you just figure out what to do with the Argos after that.
Well, I've not heard this directly, but I've heard it from enough people who claim they've heard it directly. So maybe it's the, you know, greatest sports urban myth that the NFL doesn't want to be seen as killing the Argos.
Okay.
So solve the Argos. If maybe one of the you can have the franchise, but you've got to protect the Argos. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, the NFL is ever going to kill the Argos or whatever. I mean, the fans are voting every week on the Argos right now. And boy, they're voting by buying tickets. And it's pretty gruesome over there. Mm-hmm. Toronto FC is outdrawing the Argos by a long shot. And yeah. I can tell you, way back as far as Harry Ornest, the Argos have never been particularly good about stating what the actual attendance was. So I always factor their attendance down a bit, and mm-hmm. it's already really low. So, you know, it's a wonderful franchise. It's one of the oldest franchises in North America. But, boy, it's not doing well. It loses money for everyone. And, you know, who's going to buy it next? So it might die itself. It's hard to imagine the CFL not in Toronto. But, boy, right now no one's coming to the games.
This report out of Buffalo today, Richard, talks about a feasibility study looking at three potential stadium sites, two of them in Toronto, one on the waterfront, and another in the suburb of Mississauga. Your best guess, as someone who certainly knows people, in addition to knowing people who know people, how many sites are there in Toronto right now where you could put an NFL stadium? And what would we be looking at, 75,000, 65,000?
You'd be talking 70,000, and you get parking. I mean, they seem to like parking in
right.
the NFL. It's not going to be an inner city thing. You know, I think they talked about one on the waterfront. I don't believe it would be politically acceptable to put it in Ontario Place. I think that would be a really impossible sale of everything that's gone on, the John Tory task force, et cetera, on that. So I haven't really looked at where, you know, how much farther outside of Toronto and still stay on the waterfront. I don't know. Downsview has always been interesting, but Downsview, you know, we looked at putting BMO Field into Downsview. And
that's right.
You're never sure who's in charge of it. They have trouble making decisions. Yes, we've got a Toronto Football Club Academy in there, but that was pretty modest. That was $22 million. You know, would they ever... I mean, can you really have a live runway out there in an NFL stadium? Mm-hmm. Then you start looking up in Vaughan and you go outside of the city. Because it's every other Sunday, people, and it's in the fall, I think people will drive to that. We really wanted stadium, both we wanted an arena and a stadium downtown because we wanted people to walk to it, take subways to it, and not be dependent on cars. But I think in football, you can. And, you know, I think in reading that article, I was very impressed. I mean, they're doing it. You know, they're doing a downtown site. They're doing a more outside site. They're doing it generically. They seem to be going about it the right way, if that article is true. Mm.
As a fan, can I just say, and I'll make the plea now, I don't know if this will happen in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years. Let the people tailgate in Toronto, please. Have the full NFL experience. Please, please let people tailgate.
You know, I can tell you, you know, I was at games in New Jersey, and I was at games in Philadelphia. And our liquor control, I mean, yeah, they'll throw out 9 people on a Saturday night from a Leaf game if we're playing Boston. But the crowds are so much better under control. And a lot of that is because the alcohol control is so tough. Mm-hmm. I think they need to loosen it up. I think you can run a stadium with people being well-behaved. But, yeah, it's. I think tailgating is just another one of those things like, why can't we drink in parks? I mean, we get pretty archaic alcohol laws, but that's my belief.
Yeah, take a trip to Europe or wherever. Or go to Jimmy Buffett with me last week in Boston. Tailgate a little bit. It's fun.
I just think it's sad that you need to judge the success of an athletic event
by how hammered
you can get.
No, that's not what it is, but it's part of the experience showing up. You don't have to get hammered. You can cook a steak. You can cook a hot dog. You don't have to drink. You can just, you know, if people want to, they can. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
And you can crank up Bon Jovi while you do it.
That's true. Richard Petty joins us in Primetime Sports. Want to throw this at you as well, Richard. You know, as soon as you start talking about a football stadium, there are going to be people who are going to bring up, what about a really nice outdoor, state-of-the-art, back-to-the-future ballpark for Toronto? that's never going to happen in our lifetime, is it? The Jays are going to be at the Rogers Center forever and ever and ever, correct?
Well, probably. I mean, Skydome wrecked it for everyone by getting government funding. Mm-hmm. The federal government's really against government funding. You're seeing government funding in both Alberta now for a hockey arena and Quebec City, but it's not very popular. Skydome, for all $580 million of it, was about $150 from the private sector, but the rest of it came from government. I don't see that happening. Boy, right now the mood is not that way. And with the pressure on debt, whether it's provincial or federally, governments are not keen to do it. So, you know, football, you know, someone wants a football team, I'm spending $2 billion, of which $1 billion will be the stadium. You know, is there an appetite to do that for baseball? Mm-hmm. You know, I think what Paul Beeson's going to do in 2017 by putting grass in, which will be a challenge, but they're going ahead, that's going to make it better. But at 50,000-plus seats, it's not a great baseball stadium. And, you know, it was the last of its kind, the last of the multi-use stadiums. You know, nothing else. It was Camden Yards after that and all kinds of, you know, 42,000 seat stadiums with grass.
See, so
it's tough to imagine. I don't know how you do that again now with baseball.
Yeah,
I think probably not in my lifetime.
Yeah, see, I used to have this theory when I was in Montreal at Olympic Stadium that, you know, operating on the assumption that what goes around comes around, that at some point somebody was going to wake up and go, we need more multi-use facilities, just like the old days. And there was going to be this great rush to build copycat stadiums of Olympic Stadium and the Vet in Philly. But you know what?
I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any life in that at all.
No, turf
everywhere, busted
yeah,
knees.
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
I mean, you go to Philadelphia, you go to some of these places, Denver. I mean, they've got single-purpose stadiums all beside each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's got baseball. Basketball and hockey share, but baseball, football, even soccer. I mean, they've got three and four stadiums close to each other, and they're all single purpose today.
It's worked out for everyone but Glendale.
They're better for the players. They're better for the fans. Just a lot more money invested in infrastructure.
Richard, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Okay, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Richard.
That is Richard Petty, ex-CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
I can't wait till they get grass at the Rogers Center. Psyched already for it.
You are?
Yes. Grass. It's like, tell me, players wouldn't be more inclined to play here. You know, you always hear guys complaining about their hamstrings, their knees, because, you know, Toronto, one of the two places with turf. Yeah, so.
I just threw the baseball stadium at Petty because I thought maybe he'd want to help me build a stadium.
Yeah.
Commonwealth Games are on in Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada got its first medal today. And we've kind of talked a little bit about the Commonwealth Games only in Toronto's going to play host to the Pan Am Games in less than a year, actually. And there is absolutely no buzz about the Pan Am Games here at all, you know, beyond the fact that one of the stadiums that is supposed to be built for the Pan Am Games, the stadium in Hamilton, may not be ready until October, if then.
So the bet is what happens first, that stadium gets completed or Brunt catches his bear.
John Amici, of course, former NBA center, was in Glasgow for the Commonwealth Games. And John Amici joins us on Primetime Sports. John, thanks so much for doing this today.
It's a pleasure.
I wanted to ask you about, just in general, about the Commonwealth Games. It seems to me, I don't know if the Olympics have spoiled it for everybody, but, you know, I can remember watching the Commonwealth Games. I can remember the Pan Am Games on TV even. And they just don't have the cachet anymore that they used to have, do they?
I don't think they have the cachet in... I think it's fair to say that they aren't as glamorous as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a function of the Olympics. I can say that Glasgow seemed pretty excited to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of build-up. I think the build-up, and I think you may find this in Toronto. I know some of the folks there at 2015, and I think you may well find that in Toronto there'll be this accelerating crescendo right before the games, and all of a sudden the city will be excited about the games. The country will be excited about the games. Because that's what happened, from my perspective anyway, in Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
I was there in January with a colleague of mine, and we were looking around, and it's like, good Lord, there isn't one sign-up
mm-hmm.
in January that says the Commonwealth Games are coming. And then I came back, I was there just yesterday, And all of a sudden, you know, every kid is running around with Commonwealth Games gear on. They're all excited. People are standing outside of hotels hoping to get a glimpse of the Zimbabwean sprinter. And as bizarre as that is, I think that's quite a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. There is something far more accessible about the Commonwealth Games, about the Pan Am Games, than the Olympics. One of those things being that the organization that runs both those is a little less evil than the IOC.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there's a lot less things less evil than the IOC.
Yeah.
Hey, John, how come there isn't any basketball in the Commonwealth Games? Am I missing something here?
No. It's a perfectly reasonable explanation for it, and that is that the host country the last 2 years has been terrible at basketball, and therefore has not had any real impetus or reason to want basketball back in. It's no coincidence that basketball was last in, actually when I played in the Commonwealth Games, mm-hmm. in Melbourne, because Australia is really good at it. And I believe 2018, is that right, 2018? Yeah. I think the next Commonwealth Games, I think they're back in again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's basically based on the host nation and their desire to shoot some hoops.
You know what, I'm pretty sure that if there's a press briefing, they would deny that. But it does seem to me that's the way it works. You know, it was there in Melbourne. It went to India and cricket's in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems to me a very clear line of logic.
Hey, John, basketball is such an international game. I mean, you know, it's been played in Canada for a long time. And, you know, now there are a lot of Canadians in the NBA. I know you played in the NBA, obviously. But why has it not caught on in Britain? Because it's big in other parts of Europe too. Why is it not caught on there?
It's an infrastructure problem. That's the truth. The beauty of it is that, well, the frustration, I suppose, with this is mm-hmm. just, in Britain they've never really made the effort to do the things that need to be done to make the game grow. So there's a ladder approach where, you know, a young boy or girl sees the sport, is enthused by it, and maybe at 4, 5, 6, 7 gets involved for the first time. And then there's a place for them to play with coaching that is of a decent quality and a mentality that is push them on, push them forward, and once you've exhausted your expertise, you send them to the next person. And that exists, along with this amazing club system in the rest of Europe where there are mega clubs. You know, you'll have heard of the ones in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Where they've got a football club, a volleyball club, a basketball club, and they're all part of the same organization with the same kind of philosophy. And that pushes it forward. In Britain, football has nothing to do with basketball. And basketball is of such poor quality, I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm. John, can you guys maybe, do you look at Canada at all and what we've been doing in basketball? Because we were really quiet for a long time, and now there seems to be this influx of talent coming along for Canada. Can you guys draw anything from that over in Britain, or are there any similarities there at all?
Of course we could. We mm-hmm. absolutely could. I've been saying this about Canada. I'm a Canada fan. People, I've been on many shows and said that before. But in a basketball context, there is plenty we can learn. I think there are great parallels to this, what was once a minor sport, now growing and growing and growing, not just domestically in Canada, but exporting players of high caliber elsewhere. The problem is that most of the people involved in the sport at the critical positions, and I don't really mean the governing bodies, but more so the people who've made a cottage industry out of it in the last 30 years, mm-hmm. are so entrenched that they don't want to take any advice from anybody else
mm-hmm.
for fear that they lose their stranglehold. It's really sad because it just means that kids are left seeing a game that is exciting and fun, engaging in it for half a year, realizing their coach is poorly skilled and their facilities are too expensive, and on and on and on, the challenges mount. Mm-hmm. And then they move on and express their talents in another way, in another sport.
And in some ways, it sounds an awful lot like some of the issues with soccer in Canada. Women's soccer is, the women's soccer team is, you know, pride of the country in a lot of ways. But, boy, I mean, the men's team is ranked, I don't know, they're ranked below Sudan the last time we looked. And there's an infrastructure issue. There are so many, I guess maybe the difference is in Canadian soccer, there are just so many kids playing it, but there seems to be a disconnect once they get 14 and 15.
You know what? That is identical to the problem in Britain.
Yeah.
Do you know that basketball for boys under 18 is the second most highly played sport in the country behind football?
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
And so it's exactly the same problem. They get in, they get frustrated, they get out. There's just too many challenges in the way, and we will not learn those lessons. There are so many bad people involved in the sport who've just been around, and they think they've got some kind of tenure.
Mm-hmm.
They can continue to stick around with their little teams and their little fiefdoms, and the children suffer. It's very frustrating for me. I'm trying to do something about it right now. I've done a video that's on YouTube that talks about how young people can take their future in their own hands and prepare themselves. And then this summer, I'm spending a lot of time this summer running around to different clubs and giving them a free day of coaching
mm-hmm.
for their coaches in the morning and the rest of the club, the players at night. So hopefully they'll get to take a bit of best practice and slowly improve the standards. I'm hoping that'll be the impact anyway.
What's it like trying to do this as a guy who played in the NBA and trying to tell some guys who basically haven't, look, change. Let's try to make this different. I mean, do you feel like you're going up against a wall every day, or is this something you feel you have to do for this sport?
Yeah. There's a saying, I'm going to paraphrase here, where you're never a prophet in your own homeland.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, the truth is, it's frustrating for me. It makes me have to bite my tongue a little bit. But I'm in Chicago. I just came from the gym where I just ran a bit of pickup. And the respect and deference that was shown to me in that gym was shocking to me, mostly because when I go home to England, those people there, they just have no respect. They respect Luol Deng, for example,
mm-hmm.
because he's playing now. But somehow they imagined that back in my day, playing in the NBA was somehow easy. and it's a remarkable struggle to get them to understand that I have expertise that I'm really willing to share. But they just, there's a fear, I think. You know, there's always an inadequacy that comes with being poorly skilled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're poorly skilled, having somebody who has skills come along is a direct threat to you. And you can look at any political issue from the immigration to non-qualified teachers, which is a big problem, big issue right now in England. And it's all about people being afraid that they've been coasting along with adequate skills, and then all of a sudden somebody comes along and says, no, you need to be better. And that's a direct threat to their comfortable life.
Mm-hmm. John Amici joins us on Primetime Sports. You were on with Dan Lebatard on his radio show, and we've spent some time talking about this topic as well. NFL camps are ongoing. Tony Dungy's comments about Michael Sam, that if he was, if it was his team, he wouldn't draft Michael Sam because he'd be worried about it being a distraction. Of course, Tony Dungy subsequently kind of, I don't even know if you'd say he backtracked. I don't even know if that's the right word, because I kind of read his pseudo-apology, and like a lot of things, it just seems as if it's kind of a non-apology.
Yeah. He's very good at those.
Yes.
One of the things that people need to realize about Tony Dungy is that you can't just take him on what's happened here. He has a storied history of bigoted comments about gay people, about the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
His associations with anti-gay causes, anti-gay churches, you know, this is not a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
And my question about this is, I thought football was all about winning.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was all about taking the best. I thought that the coaches who coach in the NFL are the best. And if you're a coach in the NFL, you can't handle distraction. How are you a coach in the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on your team. This is the man. I mean, Tony Dungy himself was the man who wanted to take Michael Vick while he was having a reality show done about him.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that's not a distraction, but a hardworking kid who's got a different sexuality to his somehow is a distraction. It's just so transparent. And then it's hard for me because I say objectionable things fairly frequently, actually. I get away with it because of the accent, I think, but for the most part. But even with that, I am consistent with it. I don't, if I get I'm just looking at my Twitter feed right now, and I've got like 300 tweets waiting to read, and I just know that they're all related to Lebatard, because
mm-hmm.
that's what happens after I go on his show.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's about consistency of my conviction. I keep to that. And I just don't. Dungy is all over the place with his retractions, his walk backs, his statements. And to me, that's more of an issue, more of a distraction a coach who lacks principles. Yeah, that's a problem.
You know, John, what is it about the NFL? Because we were just talking earlier with Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated about Ray Rice being suspended for two games for assaulting his fiance. Meanwhile, you've got NFL players, even former NFL players, being suspended four games for smoking marijuana or being caught in possession of marijuana. What is it about the culture in the NFL that makes it skew so far? I'm going to say so far to the right, because I think that's where it skews. And I think it might do that more so than any other sport.
I think you're probably right. I think when you look at the ownership of the NFL, it's an illuminating group of people. I mean, if you thought, I can't even remember his name now, the Clippers owner.
Donald Sterling.
Yeah, Donald Sterling. If you thought Donald Sterling was a throwback to an earlier time, you should check out some of the owners of the NFL. They are unbelievable. They are dinosaurs walking amongst us right now. And so that's part of it. The leadership from the very top is just incredibly backward.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it. And then the other part, and I think the really dangerous bit of this, is that the NFL is one of those places where they have mistaken machismo for being a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's incredibly dangerous. The idea that this overblown, overhyped, super testosterone, supercharged idea of manliness is somehow real or useful when all it does is lead to pain and fracture in families. All it is a terrible example for every boy out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's a real shame, because I want kids out there who watch the NFL to not, by just watching the behavior of those athletes, have a worse chance of a long and fruitful relationship when they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
A worse chance of handling the frustrations of their day in school. A worse chance of managing the sometimes convoluted workplace environment. And the NFL is just the worst kind of example. And then the weird part for me, and people might say, of course I'll say this, I know that there's plenty of examples of just ridiculous people I played with and against, mm-hmm. some of them in my era, who are just crazy basketball players, just crazy people. But nowadays, I hang out with the legends,
mm-hmm.
apparently we're all called them once you retire. And I'm there with the Kembe Mutombo, and he's all stressed out because he's building a new hospital. I'm there with Robert Horry, who's building a new boys and girls club. I'm there with, and the list goes on, and you suddenly realize this is a different example.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think part of the thing I've always felt about the NFL is a lot of it comes from the fact that contracts are not guaranteed. I think teams have an inordinate amount of power, and quite frankly, the NFL Players Association is just kind of, it's a lapdog of ownership. And I think when you create that culture where everything is so weighted in terms of ownership being able to rule with an iron fist, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to open discussion about important issues, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'll tell you what, I have not considered this, which makes me slightly hate myself. I think that's a really sharp assertion, because that is exactly the same position of football, soccer, in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Their players' union is pathetic. It is partly funded by the Premier League and partly funded by the Football Association, so it is at their total behest at all times. Their CEO of the Players Association is the most highly paid union official in the country. So they are in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at football in Britain and football in America, the very same kind of problems that we've highlighted, they are very similar. So I think there could well be something in the idea that the players' union is so impotent that they don't have an ability to stamp on anything on the players. And in contrast with the NBA, where the players' union is, sometimes overly robust, but strong.
And we saw with LeBron James this year in the whole Donald Sterling situation. I mean, I think we saw in a lot of ways LeBron James effectively become the most powerful athlete in his league, at least in North America. I'm not familiar with football overseas. But I think LeBron James, by basically saying, not only don't I like this guy, but if it was up to me, I would counsel players not to go and play for the Clippers.
Yeah.
We saw him sort of take a step from LeBron James superstar into the guy who is basically the most powerful figure in the league right now.
Yeah.
Which is hugely important.
The right thing. Yeah, yeah. I absolutely agree. I think, you know, I don't like everything about LeBron, but
no,
that was one moment where he stepped up in an important way into that quasi-leader of the players role, not just best player out there, but leader of the players at a critical moment. And you saw all the players fall into line, players mm-hmm. in those next playoff games saying, NBA better sort this out, otherwise we're not playing.
John, just getting back to what Tony Dungy said, do you see more of this popping up, or do you see less of this popping up, say, in the next year or two? Is this something that Michael Sam's just going to have to deal with?
More of it. Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is what we're seeing here is the dying throes of a Bronze Age ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see this, you will see more and more people speaking out, and then more and more people turning around the moment they speak out to claim that they are the victims. That's what happens in the dying throes of any regime. They speak up, they get slammed by the media and everybody else, and then they turn around and say, look at me, look at poor me, I'm the one being victimized. We're going to see a lot more of it.
John, always good to talk to you, my friend. You be well.
It's a pleasure. You too.
Take
Our
care.
Our pleasure, John. Thank you.
That is John Amici, of course, a former NBA center, social commentator, and he's a spokesman for LGBT rights, and a guy who is not afraid to rattle some cages.
That was fantastic. Good on him.
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough during the Olympics in London to spend a little bit of time with him. He mm-hmm. was actually working a basketball game that I was covering. I went to see Lithuania play Argentina and to see Jonas Valanciunas, and he was working the game. He's a fascinating guy.
Oh, man.
And if you're not following him on Twitter, why aren't you?
Isn't it great? It kind of goes back to what we said about the post-game baseball interviews at the top of the show and how Aaron Sanchez was giving him his true thoughts last night. And isn't it great when you speak with someone and you know they're speaking from the heart and you know that they're giving you their thoughts unfiltered and mm-hmm. you're getting a picture of them their true honest self. So I really enjoyed that.
Primetime Sports. We'll take a break and then we'll be back.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, for those of you who are interested, I mean, I realized I told you should follow John Amici on Twitter, and then like a twit, I didn't give you the guy's Twitter handle. So his Twitter handle is I'm losing my voice, man. At John Amici, that's AAMAECHI. And I think you can put the OBE, Order of the British Empire, in too if you want. So there you go. Social commentator. Like I said, he's an interesting dude, and he's not afraid to say stuff. And he's not afraid to speak truth to power, which is a little odd at times for people in this industry.
Yes, it is.
Where do we got to go? We want to talk about golf. Apparently, there's a golf event in Montreal.
Yes, there's a golf event in Montreal.
It's the East-Westchester North-South Classic, I think, isn't it?
It's Royal Montreal. It's the Canadian Open. Where does your hatred of golf come from?
I played it in high school. I loved golf. I used to sneak in the nine-hole
course. So you got cut from a golf team at one point? Is that what happened?
Nobody gets cut from the Morden Collegiate Institute golf team. I used to sneak on the course on, like, the sixth hole and fire her up and have a couple of, you know, and then golf. And, I just think it's, you know, I got to the point where it was kind of, just got tired of golfers.
Yeah, well, see, I used to quite enjoy soccer, but then I got...
You never enjoyed soccer.
I got cut. I think it was under 14. Ian McAdam sent me loose. Didn't invite me to camp, and that was it. And I developed a disdain.
Fat Jerry in the team?
No, Chris Cooper was. You talked to Chris Cooper. He played at Acadia. He'll still say one of the best keepers he ever played with right here. Of course, that was when we were both in the under-8 division. So
I was going to say. No, seriously, the Canadian Open is on this weekend, and at a terrific golf course. I've actually been there. I haven't mm-hmm. golfed on it, but I've covered golf there. But it just, man, it's just so not on the radar screen.
The Canadian Open?
Yeah.
Well, it like used
people,
to be,
people all worked up about it.
It used to be considered the fifth major. Remember when they used to call it the fifth major? Last I checked, Michael Putnam was leading at 6 under, but that was a while ago, so I'm not really sure who's in the lead now. But David Hearn, he was doing solid again. He was 3 under through 17, so maybe we'll have a Canuck there. You know what else is going on in Montreal this week?
Oh, tennis.
No.
Starts up.
That tennis. But you know what else is going on in Montreal? And this is a total selfish move.
What?
The Just for Laughs Festival. And I just want to give a shout out and congratulations to my brother, comedian Peter Anthony, who played at Just for Laughs for the first time ever last night. Peter had a show at Just for Laughs.
Wait a minute. Your last name's Reed.
Dad wouldn't let him use our last name because he swore a lot when he started as a comedian.
Really?
So my brother's a comedian. His name is Peter Anthony. And he played at Just for Laughs last night.
Good for him. Where? Yeah. Which theater?
He played at one of the clubs. I think he's at a theater tonight. It's a TV taping tonight, so you'll see it later in the year.
Wow.
But I got to say, I'm really proud of him. And for Peter to get to Just for Laughs, it'd be like a hockey player getting to the Stanley Cup. So I'm really proud of my brother, and I just wanted to give him a shout-out on the old national radio machine.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
See, now I know a guy whose brother's a comedian. I know Scott Oak. Son Darcy's the magician.
He's very good, Darcy.
Yeah.
By the way, Ryan just informed me my brother, for those of you listening in Montreal, he's at Club Soda tonight, so go
Club
check him out.
Club Soda!
Peter Anthony at Club Soda. And it's a TV taping tonight, so.
I wonder if the boiler room's still working at Club Soda.
Oh, who knows? So anyway, yeah, I'm pretty proud of Peter. And Dad, actually, a couple years ago, once Peter started to get a little more successful at comedy, he went up to him and said, Peter, why do you consider using the name Reed now? And it's like, no, Dad, it's too late. I'm kind of, they've been introducing me as Peter Anthony for 10 years now, and, you know. I can't just suddenly change to Peter Reed because...
That is cool. I cannot imagine standing up and telling jokes.
No.
And I just can't.
It's guts, man. And he's very good. He's quite thoughtful.
Does he swear a lot, though, too?
Doesn't swear a lot anymore, no. I think most comedians go through their swearing stage early because I don't want to say it's cheap laughs, but it's somewhat of an easy out, I think, for a lot of them, but... Mm. No, he works the odd word in there if he gets worked up.
Good
but he's quite a social commentator as well. He gets into some pretty testy issues. So he's like much like broadcasters. Certain broadcasters, he's not for everyone. Yeah. But no, he's doing great. So I'm very proud of him.
If you're in Montreal, he is at Club Soda. Peter Anthony, that's tremendous.
Check him out. Yeah, impressed. It's pretty cool for us. So yeah, because we grew up watching Just for Laughs, and now he's there. So it's pretty cool.
Of course, the other big story involves Brunt's Bear.
Yes, Brunt's Bear. We need a Brunt. Someone wants to get a Brunt's Bear Twitter account going. Has it happened yet?
I don't think so. I've got nothing from Brunt. I'm a little concerned now. So I've sent two emails this afternoon.
Yeah,
and the last one said Bear ? Or beer.
Mm-hmm.
So
nothing. So are we to assume that perhaps the bear has won?
I don't know. All I know is this morning Brunt told me or sent me an email saying that there was no bear overnight, and I didn't ask him if they had to refresh the turkey fat and the bread and the syrup or not. But we'll be in touch with you. You know what? If I find out tonight, I swear to God, if I find out tonight, I'll tweet it out.
There you go.
I'll tweet it out.
But if not, to be continued.
Yeah.
To be continued.
Brunt has promised me a picture of said bear if he's caught.
Oh, man.
So there will be a tweetable picture. And you know what would be great? We got the round table tomorrow. It would be great if it happened during the round table.
5 to 7 Eastern, 6:30 to 8:30 in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic breaking news. We'd have to come up with the panda alert from Anchorman. If Brunt catches his bear.
I have no idea what Anchorman is.
You have to watch Anchorman. You're a vain television broadcasting radio Madonna now. You have to watch Anchorman and join the rest of us.
I am hardly vain. Thank you, Mr. Reed. This has been fun.
My pleasure.
For Ken Reed and Dave Perkins, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us in Primetime Sports. Don't forget, the Friday Roundtable convenes tomorrow. Don't want to miss that. We've got a very special treat for you. Trust me. Have a great night, everybody.